Can they hear me when I talk to them? When we intuitively look, when we look in our mind's eye, close our eyes, think of our loved one, and then start talking to them, focusing on them, it's like placing a spirit cell phone call. And so they can very much hear that communication, feel that communication.
Joshua Lewis, welcome to Passion Harvest. I'm so excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you, Louisa. It's an honor to be here and always have a chance to speak about what I do. Thank you for having me.
I love your passion and I'm excited to speak to you. I guess my first question is, and you do incredible work and research, but how do we have, well, two questions. How does one connect with the other side? How do you connect with the other side?
So it's a good question. I am a trained medium. I don't claim to be the best medium or anything, but I'm pretty good at what I do. And in order for me to connect, I have to I have to focus. I have to focus. I have to have faith and believe in my intuitive ability. And I have to tune in to the other side. I'm not someone that wherever I go in the supermarket or in public, I just pick up things all the time. I have to put an effort, concerted effort to really tune into what's there. It's very subtle. Connecting with spirit is very subtle. It's not, I mean, sometimes I'll get hit with something pretty hard, but most of the time, it comes in a feeling. It comes in, I'm clairvoyant, clairsentient, clairaudient, claircognizant. So those are the clairs that I have. And but like I said, it's a very subtle thing. I think what's interesting about what I do is that as I do those things and I hear something or feel something or see something that really comes through as thought a lot of times. When I go to my equipment, which is the instrumental transcommunication aspect, using my equipment, I normally get validation that what I'm getting or what I'm feeling or hearing is right. Sometimes I'm wrong and they'll correct me, but
Many people who watch this show, clearly it's going to happen to everyone, has lost loved ones. What's your advice for them to connect with their lost loved ones?
Well, I'm a big believer in still having some kind of communication with your loved one. I'm not saying everyone has to use equipment like I do. I think that to do what I do, you kind of have to. I'll just say it's not for everyone in what I do, in all aspects of what I do, but to be able to just stop. Look at a picture of a loved one or close your eyes and think of that loved one and start to speak to them, I think is a really wonderful thing. I think it's a very helpful thing, not just to you, but to them as well. I think we're meant to have some kind of ongoing communication or relationship with our loved ones on the other side. I've always said, a lot of times when I'm doing a reading or a session for someone, one of the main questions they'll ask is, can they hear me when I talk to them? And so I get that intuitively that yes, they can hear you. When I ask through my equipment, recorders or boxes or programs, they always say, yes, I can hear you. Yes, I can hear you. So they confirm that. So when we look at When we intuitively look, when we look in our mind's eye, close our eyes, think of our loved one, and then start talking to them, focusing on them, it's like placing a spirit cell phone call. And so they can very much hear that communication, feel that communication, and that's a good thing. And that's all someone needs to do in order to connect with a loved one.
Thank you, Joshua. I'd love to move on in a minute to your ITC or instrumental transcommunication and the evidence of the afterlife. But well, this show's about you today, but what happens when our physical body dies?
I mean, I'm not an expert, even though I do this. I've been doing this almost, over a decade, based on over 3,000 readings that I've done over, based on over 500 box sessions that I've done for people. It feels and sounds like the consciousness transfers from the body to another dimension, where it could be a room, it could be just a place that it's like a safe place. It's a transitional place for them as they adjust from being used to being in the physical meat sack that we're in these bodies. And there's sometimes there's a loved one that will greet them. Sometimes there's a sighting, a feeling of light. Sometimes there's a divine experience that they have with a higher power, albeit a Jesus or Buddha or Krishna or Allah, any one of their, the belief is a big part of that. So, all of those roads lead back to source. So some people that don't believe in that kind of thing, they're not going to be, God is not going to force themselves, force himself, herself onto, onto that soul. So there's a very, we don't lose our free will. We have free will here, and so we retain that. If there's some emotional stuff that they're dealing with, they left maybe with some regret or feeling of emotionalism, or they're still going to feel that kind of stuff. So maybe the physical pain that they don't feel anymore, but they, they will still, there's an adjustment period. But I mean, the majority of the people that I talk to on the other side share of being in a good place, being okay, being a lot of times feeling joy or bliss or peace. Some may die in some very traumatic circumstances, and so they still may be missing this realm or missing someone from here or their life. But in time, which is different, time is different. But they will continue to evolve spiritually, on the other side. So, I mean, it's not a clear-cut answer. It's not just heaven or hell. Hell is really, I think, a construct of our own making, of our own fears and stuff. So if we did some bad things, it's not an eternity in a fiery place, but we will have to come to terms with what we've done. If there was something that we hurt someone or we did some bad things, we will have to deal with that. I think karma is very real. But for the most part, if someone lived a good life and had a faith in a higher power, they, many times they talk about walking with God. They've met God. They've communicated with God. A lot of times they talk about Jesus. There is no religion on the other side, so it's not like, oh, you believed in this, so you go through that door. The someone may, if they believed in Buddhism, they may have an experience with Buddha or may have something along those lines. I mean, I've heard Jewish people meeting Christ. I've heard people of all different faiths. They've talked about Christ. They've talked about other avatars, other Mahavatars, enlightened beings. So it's angels. They've talked about angels. I've heard the mention of a palace many times, a castle or a palace many times, from multiple souls. So that's not just from one source. So it's interesting.
And yes, and it's hard to describe in words. Many people that I've interviewed, even in near-death experiences, the words just don't do it justice. It's relating it into our humanness. You spoke about people that have died certain deaths or left loved ones behind. And I know some of the work you do is helping lost souls cross over.
Yeah, I mean, early on, I did a lot more of that. Now, so I mean, I still, regardless of who I'm asking for, whether it's just someone's loved one, I do ask for well-known people too. I never claim that I know for a fact that I'm speaking to that person because I don't know for a fact. I always joke about that. You know, unless someone hands me their driver's license through the spirit box or through the equipment, I won't know for sure that it's actually them. But most of the time, I would say 90 plus percent of the time, the answers, the responses are very indicative of what that person would say. I have belief that my spirit guides and helpers on the other side, which I couldn't do this work without them. That they're doing what they're doing in order for me to be able to connect with that soul, whether it's a regular person or a well-known person. It does seem like when I reach out to a well-known person, the connection sometimes can be almost better or even more astounding than it is when I contact a regular person. I have a theory on that. A lot of times, you know, if I'm reaching out to a well-known person, it's someone that was involved in movies or television or music or something. And so those people, you know, made a living communicating, made a living of speaking and being, I guess, prolific in what they did. So I do feel like they have a good sense of how to do this, or they're more comfortable in communicating. So I feel like their messages do come through sometimes even clearer than when I'm speaking with a regular person, which is interesting. But yeah, I mean that, and the point I'm making with that and long-winded answer is that regardless of who I'm asking for, whether it's a regular person or well-known person, whether they lived a really good life that we knew, that the loved one, you know, that the person says that they did, or we could see that they lived a public life that was very good. I always just say prayers for them at the end. I focus on the light for them, and I ask, you know, my higher power, Christ, to come in and shower them with light. And they seem to always say thank you, and that they feel it, that the prayers that really help them. So, yeah.
How do we not become a lost soul?
How to not become a lost soul is to have a conscious contact with a power greater than ourselves. That is the way to do it. It's through prayer and meditation. It's through communing with a higher power, whether that's just Source, God, the Almighty, you know, or something more personal, like Jesus Christ, or like Buddha, like Krishna, like any of these enlightened ones. It can really benefit us to have that ongoing relationship with a God of our understanding, with our understanding, not a God of Christian understanding or Judaism or anything else. It's a God of our understanding or even misunderstanding, because no one is going to understand God. But that should not prevent us from having an ongoing or seeking an ongoing relationship with that
While
power.
we're in a physical form.
While we're in physical form, that's the most important. The whole point of this life, as far as I've come to understand, yes, we should have families. Yes, we should do our jobs well. If you want to drive a nice car, it's fine, you know, to have some nice clothes, or you know, to have hobbies and things. I think it's important that we experience life. But if that becomes the sole focus, the status in our jobs, in our, you know, our bank accounts, what we can accumulate material, you know, materialistically, that we have lost the purpose of what this life is about. You know, love is really everything. And I say that as I'm saying that, I still don't have an understanding of what that really means. I'm actively still seeking that. I want to understand what unconditional love is. That's to love someone without putting conditions on it. And I don't know anyone that really does that. Very few people actually do that. And when they do that, we kind of go, how the heck are you doing that? How do you love someone regardless of what they say or do to you? How do you turn the other cheek? How do you do things where you're not looking for some kind of payoff in return? And that is a main goal. But ultimately, the goal, as far as I'm concerned, is to work on that connection with God, with the higher power, and keep on working on that until the day that the body stops breathing. And then even further, even going further after that. But you know, this life is not meant for us to just live and work and have our families and do all those things and then say, okay, the spiritual stuff will be left for when we're on the other side. We should do the work now, work on ourselves, try to become better human beings, try to, you know, self-appraisal is a big deal. You know, I remember a quote, you know, greater is the feat that the man who conquers himself rather than an army. And that is a big, that's a big statement right there. I think Socrates said, you know, a life without self-appraisal is not a life worth living. So there's those kinds of notions that need to be held on to. And if someone's doing that, when they get to the end of the physical life, they won't have the regrets that a lot of people do have when they get to the end and going, well, I focused on only making money, but you can't take that stuff with you. So a lot of these people that focus on getting their careers to where they think it should be, or the status of where they think they should be, or the bank account. Excuse me, that is not, you know, you can't take that stuff with you. So it's like kind of working to put stuff into the bank account here, but we really should be making deposits into the spiritual bank account, because that bank account you can take with you, you know?
Just reminds me of a quote, St I think Steve Jobs said it. I don't care if I'm the richest man in the cemetery.
Right, you know, and that's interesting you bring up Steve Jobs, because you know Jobs, as successful as he was, he died of cancer, and at a fairly young age too. I think he was like 58 or something. I don't remember exactly how old he was, but you know, Steve believed in a man who I feel has the answers. So his guru was Paramahansa Yogananda, and that is also my guru, Paramahansa Yogananda. And so this book I always recommend to people is the Autobiography of a Yogi. And this book is really important. I always tell people about, you know, my book as well, but I would say even before you would read my book, I would say read this book. And you know, he was a great believer, not in religion. He wasn't a man of religion, but he was a man of the science of communicating with God. And so he loved Jesus Christ, but not in a religious way. He loved Krishna. He read the Bhagavad Gita. He read many other ancient texts, Indian texts, and the texts from all over. But what's interesting about it is that Steve Jobs made sure that there were 500 copies of this book at his funeral, so that everyone in attendance would leave with this book. The same with George Harrison. George Harrison made sure to have copies of this book in his trunk or in his home, that when he would meet someone, he would make sure to give people this book. And what I would say is that I had been doing my afterlife research for many years prior to finding this. And when I finally read this book, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. And when this book finally came into my circle, into my consciousness, and I read it, it validated already what I had found out through my afterlife research. So I found that to be very interesting. That's how I knew that you know, Guruji had the answers that I was also, that I was finding already, but he was validating. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, interesting. And you're the second guest I've had this week that's recommended that book. And a big congratulations to your book, Finding Hope in the Afterlife. I will leave a link below in the show notes. I'd love to talk about your evidence of the afterlife. But first, you did mention spirit guides. What are they, and how do you connect with them? How do you see them?
Well, I didn't know that. I mean, I've been told that, everyone has a spirit guide or a spirit guide or two. I started doing some of the recordings, 10 years ago, recording EVP, electronic voice phenomenon, on recordings on voice recorders, doing the sessions I did on spirit boxes and little radios and things like that. And you would have the same names popping up a lot of times. There was a name Bob that kept coming up. There was a name Michael that kept coming up. And so there, every time I would turn on my stuff, you would hear these names, and you would hear other spirits saying, "Well, Bob is going to get them. We're going to help. He's helping. Michael is helping. This one's helping." So eventually, I learned the names of a few of them that were helping. So I know now that I had Bob. Bob is not around anymore. That's interesting how kind of that, you have some that come and go within your life. A lot of them, what I've come to understand, they're not individuals that necessarily you knew in this life. They're not, some are, can be family members that passed on. But I didn't know of a Bob that I knew of. I didn't know of a Michael that I knew of. So a lot, there are a lot that come into your space that are either being asked by your higher power to help you, or that are working with you because they're being helped by their task of helping you. So there's this symbiotic relationship that's going on. It's kind of this two-way street. It's not left only to one that will help. Like I said, there's multiple. I have Michael, Chris, Brian, I've heard Patrick, I've heard the name Betsy. So there's these wonderful souls that will be helping me. How do you connect with them? You can connect with them through meditation. You can talk to them and say, to my guide, to my spirit guide. Sometimes you can get a name, but names are not important. So sometimes they don't want to tell you a name. I found that when I found the name or two, I would just keep calling on those specific ones when in fact there would be others that would be helping. And so I just kind of say the blanket, I kind of just say the name, all of them. And I don't know at any given time which one may be helping me in that moment. So I just trust in Christ that He is putting the right souls in my space. And so I would say that whether you do anything like what I do, intuitive work, afterlife research, or just a connection with your guides, the connection really needs to start and end with your higher power. If you do that and you focus on your God of your understanding, then you can't go wrong. Then there will be these angels, these guides that will come in and help you. They're not to take the place of what God is for each person. So I think that's important to say.
Thank you. And you've mentioned, of course, it's a name. You've mentioned Christ a few times. How does he feel? He, she, how the energy feel, and what is the relationship for you?
Yeshua, which is his real name, Jesus is the name that the Greeks gave him, really. But you know, there's the name Issa that you know has there's many different names that he's had, but Yeshua was the Hebrew name, and you know he was an actual man. Whether you know people want to argue the legitimacy of whether he's the Messiah and all this other stuff, and you know what my feeling is that there's just no ego at all, that he doesn't care about. You know, whether what he's called, he just wants to help. He just wants to love. He just wants to help and love. That's it. And he's for any and all men and women. And then that's the case, all souls. You know, it's an amazing connection that's always evolving. There are times that I feel like I have a handle on it, that I have an understanding of it. And then there's days that I go, I don't know who he is. I don't know what, you know, you know, it's a very humbling experience because, you know, some might say, well, you talk about him and, you know, we know that you are very close to him. And like they look at me as I'm some kind of connection to him. And so maybe they can get a connection to him through me or something like that. I mean, I've had that happen and I'm like, you know, I don't claim that. I don't act like that. I don't want to be that way. If he uses me at times to help another person, that is the greatest honor that I could ever have. But I'm still trying to figure that out. I'm still trying to understand my connection and work on that connection. So I don't claim to be some master of understanding when it comes to that connection. I feel that I don't know. I don't know. It's a you know, I have his picture on my wall with the other gurus that are there. You know, there's Mahavatar Babaji, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, Paramahansa Yogananda, and this is the lineage of gurus that kind of were in you know with Kriya Yoga, but Christ is a big part of that. Krishna, Bhagavan Krishna, is a big part of that. So it's all interwoven, and so you know, I mean, I think Christ was a Gnostic. I think you know there, you know, when he spoke about you know, I am the way, that only, you know, I'm paraphrasing that, you know, that you must go through me to the Father in order, you know, he wasn't saying him specifically. He was speaking about the Christ consciousness that is in all of us, that we have to, you know, tune into. You know, I am the way, I am the truth, the light. He wasn't saying that Jesus, the Christ, the man, was that. He was saying that he was the embodiment of the Father, and so that we all can be that. We are all made in his image, that he was made in his image. We are all made in his image. So, you know, anything that Christ did, he was saying that we had the power to do that ourselves. So, you know, some people will, you know, kind of get hung up on that. Unfortunately, his name can bring about a lot of, you know, scorn and kind of this. You know, and I think that these mega churches and these pastors that make $40 million a year, they can bring a bad name to what Christ was about, because that's not what he was about, you know, and that's a shame. And so when you hear someone talk, when you know, and the name Jesus comes up, we don't know what kind of version of Christ this person believes in, and what, you know, is this the person that, you know, they'll, you know, Jesus didn't believe in gays and all this other stuff. And I don't buy that crap for one second. You know, he
Yeah.
was all loving, non-judgmental. You know,
Divine.
that's the way it is. So, you know what I mean? It's not this,
Yeah.
you know, the Bible can really, unfortunately, there's a lot of truth in the Bible, and I write about it in my book. There's a lot of beautiful things within the Bible. There's a lot of misconceptions, misinterpretations. There's a lot of things that were left out of the Bible, and it was there to control man, unfortunately. So, you know, it's driven a lot of wedges between people, unfortunately. So.
So, if someone's wanting to establish a deeper relationship with Christ or Christ consciousness or the divine, I mean, as you said, there's so many names for it. What would you advise to establish that divine connection?
Prayer, talking to that power, inviting that power into your life, and doing it on a personal level, not through a priest or a pastor. I mean, though any of those people that you feel an intuitive sense about, a feeling that if they're a good man or woman that you feel that may have some helpful tips or guidance to help you, but it's not through a confessional booth or anything else. It's sitting, in nature, sitting in a space in your home that you feel comfortable in, and putting on, some classical music or some meditational music, lighting a candle and talking to that power as I'm talking to you right now. That's the best way, saying, I don't know who you are, or I want to know who you are, or I feel I have a sense that you can hear me, but please show me more. The prayer, I believe, or I believe, but help me with my non-belief. That's a big one. That's a good one. Sinner or saint, I am your child. That's another good mantra to say, because we can feel not worthy. We can feel like we're not, we can feel like, who am I to, I've made mistakes. I'm not perfect. I still judge, and I still get angry at my fellow man and, brother and sister, and we just feel not worthy. And so that can draw, or drive a wedge between us and in God. Shame is a big problem. So if we feel some shame because of something we've done in our lives, so by saying that, a lot of times I have to say that often, because I am not perfect. I mean, I am like far from it. Like, I get angry, I'm short-tempered at times, I have, judgmental moments. I mean, I just came from the doctor, and some woman, just was in the middle of the road, and she, was, just like, get out of the way. And I'm just like, I mean, I can get that way really quickly. And, I can be real hard on myself about those kinds of things. But that's why I say, sinner or saint, I am your child. Sinner or saint, I'm your child. So that's important for me to say, because then it relieves me of having to be this perfect example, and I could still go to him and say, hey, I need you. I love you. I want you. I need you more than ever now. On the physical, on the outside, the exterior, it may not look like I need him more than ever now, because I've been in worse spots in my life. I've had a really crazy past, and I talk about it in my book. But I need him more than ever now, because I'm on a good path. I can't become complacent. I can't rest on my laurels. I can't, think that I've done some good things and now I can just kind of coast now. I have to keep working at that on a daily basis. So yeah. But anyway, yeah, talking to him, her, it, that source, is, and just doing it like we're doing now, is probably the biggest and most important thing that anyone can do.
Having a conversation, and we can also ask for help and or guidance.
That's it.
I'd love to talk about your ITC, instrumental trans communication. I think that's correct, your evidence of afterlife and all the research you've done. Do you mind sharing pieces of that with the audience?
I was just in, I've done some live events, and I was just in in August, I guess. So it was about, it's almost 6 months ago, a little less than 6 months ago. I was at a conference in Virginia at that the Monroe Institute and the International Remote Viewing Association put on, large 220 plus people conference, a lot of speakers, a lot of brilliant minds, And the video of that presentation is on my channel, Hope Paranormal, on YouTube. And so if you look that up, anyone wants to look that up on, you just type in Hope Paranormal on YouTube, you'll see my little, blue symbol with the word hope. And the preview video is that presentation that I gave regarding ITC and the work that I've done. And just to give you a little bit of an understanding, it's not something new. It's been around for, over 100 years. People like Thomas Edison, Nikola Tesla, there's Frederick Jurgensen, who was a filmmaker. There's a brilliant Latvian scientist, Konstantin Radabaugh, who was another brilliant mind, who these guys worked on creating devices or recording voices from another dimension and using any kind of equipment, electronics, computers, TVs, voice recorders, any of those kinds of things to make contact with intelligent beings is instrumental transcommunication. And that's what I've done. I mean, I felt like I had a good enough faith in my higher power. I felt like my intuitive ability was being developed with my teacher, Deborah Lynn Katz, who's a PhD. She's a brilliant mind. She's done a lot of great work. And so she taught me how to work on developing my intuitive ability. And so I would work on those things. At the same time, I would be recording intelligent responses from beings on the other side. And so I can, I have some remarkable communication with them. And what I found was that, in order for it to work, I had to connect intuitively. I had to connect with my ability first. And then when I did that, then I could invite them to work the equipment with me. And a lot of times they would validate what I was getting in my own self, my own ability. And that's it. I do sessions for people all the time, for their loved ones on the other side. I give them a meditation, a brief 15-minute meditation, guided meditation. They do that on their own, then they get on the phone or Zoom like this, and I have my stuff set up, and we'll invite their loved one to come through. It's not easy. It's not perfect. Sometimes they'll say, "Oh, it's not working." They're on the other side, they'll say, "Why can't he hear me like me? I can't always hear everything that is said in real time. I have to go back and listen to get a lot of the responses. I can only hear about 30% or 40% sometimes on a good day, what's coming through in real time. If I go back, I can hear more." But we get a lot of validation. We get a lot of validation. I just was reviewing a session that a woman did with me, and she asked for her dad, and her dad was coming through, and he says, "I'm safe, I'm okay. I saw the light, I went to the light, I'm okay." And so she, a lot of times people want to ask a validating question to see if it's really them, which I totally get. And she says, "Dad, what was my nickname that you'd call me?" And he says, "Little Miss Nancy." And she heard that in real time. And she goes, "Oh, I heard it." And she's like, "Little Nancy, Little Miss Nancy, that's my name. That's what he used to call me." So, you get those a lot of times, those really amazing validations that really do prove that it is the loved one. So I think it's remarkable. But a lot of people, it's so ahead of its time that even mediumship, which is accepted more and more now, or it's being accepted more and more, even mediums still go, "Come on. How is that possible? Like, I can believe that I can connect with a loved one and get messages, but how are we to believe that they're able to speak through equipment?"
So
So they really,
through audio.
yeah, through audio
Okay.
equipment. I mean, they just don't. I mean, I would say 90% of the world when they see my clips and videos are just like, this is so fake. How anyone could believe this? And I say, you know, I can do this anywhere with anyone at any time. I could show you any part of my process. I could show you my sound source. I've held live events. I've worked with the Bigelow Institute of Consciousness Studies. I gave that presentation at that conference, working with the Monroe Institute and IRVA. You know, I have many proven cases of people that are coming through, giving us detailed information that I did not know. There was no way to know before even authorities would release information. I worked with the missing woman that was Gabby Petito, Gabrielle Petito, who was a big case in the U.S. that she was murdered by her boyfriend, and she came through, and still to this day, she gave the most information, the most detailed information that was about her death than any other soul that I ever reached out to. And I mean, months before, you know, her autopsy was released, she said how she was killed, what happened to her, who killed her, that her boyfriend was already dead, that he killed himself. I mean, she did amazing work. And, you know, I've kept in contact with her because of my connection with her, and it's been amazing. So, but there's others that have done exceptionally well, you know, in coming through and giving us details about what's happened to them. And it's just undeniable. But even with that undeniable evidence, it's hard for people to accept it because of their belief system. If their belief system is just not there, it's like cognitive dissonance. It's like two opposing thoughts can't exist in the same mind, kind of makes their mind go haywire. It's like, woo-woo, like they just can't, they can't take that information in. They won't.
Yeah. I mean, look, everyone has free will. We're not trying to even convince anyone here, but there's just so much evidence. It's almost undeniable.
It is undeniable, but
Yeah.
at the same time, you're right. And, you know, I mean, if someone's a respectful skeptic, I will talk to them all day. I will share with them. I will answer their questions. It's the, you know, it's the comments like, you know, how could anyone believe this guy, this charlatan, this fake, you know? And again, I mean, I've been doing this a long time, so I've been able to work past that stuff. But, you know, I am still human. On any given day, I can kind of, you know, read a comment and be like, you know,
That
ugh, you
hurts.
know, it
I
gets
don't
a
think you
little
should take it
frustrating.
personally.
No, I try not to, and most of the time I don't. Sometimes I may get caught off guard and go, you know, how dare you
Yeah. Well,
question my
they're
authority?
good teachers, I guess.
They are. Everything's a teacher. Everything is
Well,
yeah.
Joshua Lewis, I've loved having you on Passion Harvest. Is there anything else you'd like to share with the Passion Harvest audience that I haven't asked you today?
No, I mean, I just, you know, keep seeking, work on the connection with your higher power. That's the most important aspect of my message, I feel. Your loved ones want to hear and connect with you. They are okay. We will be okay. But here is the place to do the real spiritual work now. Don't wait until we've reached the other side. I would say check out my book if you want to learn more. Finding Hope in the Afterlife. My website is hopeparanormal.com, where you can, you know, I have a free app that I created for people for them to check out. I have a paid program for people to use for computers only if they want to try it. You know, I have events, and I share all my work on the channel, and so you know, it's some really amazing stuff. So you could find all of that on my website, hopeparanormal.com. And yeah, you know, love is the message. Love is the answer.
Very true. Joshua, what a great way to end the show. It's all about love. Thank you so much for being on Passion Harvest.
Thank you so much, Louise. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right.
If you liked this episode, please do subscribe.